Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us is Dr. Steven Bergman, who writes under the pen name Samuel Shem. A novelist, playwright, and essayist, Bergman is a graduate of Harvard and Harvard Medical School and was a Rhodes Scholar. His novels include The House of God, Fine, and Mount Misery, and the launch of the paperback of The Spirit of the Place will be held at the Hudson Opera House on January 26th. Steven Bergman, thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations on all your success. Let me start with The House of God. I am told that many medical schools have on their curricula, in one place or another, the funniest novel I think I have ever read in my life. I mean, it is hysterical. You read it, the tears come out of your eyes, and you pound on the floor. When you have that, when you have that kind of success in early in life, does it make things more difficult?
Well, I think that in some ways yes, in some ways no. The first novel being so successful led to my, I think, trying to do too much in the second novel, which was called Fine, which was about a psychoanalyst. And it was really hard work, and I got kind of depressed and reconsidered. But then, you know, a thing that makes you mature as a writer or as a human being is if you happen to go through some suffering and you find your way through it. And you know, luckily I've done that. And actually, you know, I love writing. I've always loved writing. And everything's gone really well since then.
You went to medical school and you became a psychiatrist. How does that fit with writing?
Well, you know what, Alan? I think for writing fiction, it is a hindrance. And I tried to protect myself from the hindrance of going into psychiatry with a filter between me and other people, you know, a theory like Freud or Jung or whatever. And so I never read anything when I was in training to be a psychiatrist, etc. I think there are almost no psychiatrists who have become really wonderful writers of fiction. They write nonfiction, which is okay, but nobody. I think writers are born either with a right brain or a left brain, and a fiction brain or a nonfiction brain. And I was born with a fiction brain, and I did psychiatry to basically have a way of earning a living in an interesting way and having mornings free to write.
Do you still do it?
No, I did enough. I did several decades at Harvard, and all the time, you know, I chose it partly because I'd have mornings free to write, and so I never scheduled patients in the mornings and wrote then and saw people in the afternoon, but that's a very wearing way to do it.
Did your patients ever show up in your fiction?
Well, the hardest novel to write was Mount Misery because it was about my first year training at a psychiatric hospital here in Boston. And it was very, very hard to use anything from my real patients because of confidentiality. So it was a struggle. But I found ways to do it. You know, you learn how to fictionalize things.
Right. I know that the book, the first book, The House of God, has been awarded every kind of prize you could name. They celebrated its anniversary. You're honored and feted each time something like that happens. And now I wanted to ask you about the novel that is now going into second printing, which is The Spirit of the Place. And we know that on January 26th, there's going to be a kickoff at the Hudson Opera House. But the book is right about our favorite town, Hudson, isn't it?
It's right. It's about a close resemblance to Hudson, which I call, for fictional purposes, Columbia. So I talk instead of Hudsonians, I talk about Columbians and pre-Columbians, those who didn't get born there and moved up from the city. And, this book is a very special book for me because the thing you can do in fiction that you can't do in real life is what you never get to do. And I always wanted to go back to Hudson and join this wonderful old doctor, Dr. Harold Levine, who really saved my life as an adolescent. And took me around with him to all throughout Columbia County to see cases he was going out to see, you know, deliveries and horses and everything. Loved the guy. And I always wanted to come back to Hudson to join him in practice. But, you know, life led otherwhere, I guess is the word. And so I decided I was going to do it in fiction. And so it's the very simple story of a 40-year-old divorced doctor who's been running around the world, who was born in Columbia. And then, even though he's in love with the wonderful, sexy, bright Italian Buddhist yoga teacher, so you get to do things like that in fiction, if not in life, He's called back to Hudson by his mother's death, and the terms of her will are such he has to stay there in the middle of the town in her house for a year and 13 days. And it's a rough town that he really fled and didn't like very much when he grew up in it in the 50s and 60s. And so this is a trial, and it's a story of a guy, a young doctor, who comes back to the town and joins his mentor in practice. And he thinks his job is to heal the town, and then the town winds up healing him.
And that is autobiographical, some of it, anyway.
Well, yeah, you know, the inspiration came about when I heard about the... Because I had moved out of Hudson, I live in Boston.
Sure.
The inspiration came about when I was brought back to Hudson by the incredible 200th bicentennial, and it turns out it was a revelation of history to me, this incredible history of this town that I never realized. You know, I had been taught in school that it was a whaling town because they caught whales in the river. And for 40 years, I never doubted that.
But
though there aren't any whales in fresh water, as you know.
No, but they hauled them up from the Atlantic and cut them up there, didn't they?
Yeah, but nobody knew that. Everybody I talked to in Hudson when I came back said, well, they caught them in the river. And then in the novel, of course, this is a great thing for a fiction writer. In the novel, the person he falls in love with, since it's a love story as well as a kind of a mystery and a whatever, the person he falls in love with is the person who gives him an answer. Everybody says they caught him in the river, and she turns out to be the town historian. So it's really a novel about a lot of things, but one of them is how your personal history really is so much influenced by your town's history and your cultural history, which you may not know anything about.
But, of course, the other thing besides whales that Hudson was known for was red light.
Yeah.
How does that figure?
Well, that's exactly right. You know, when I was growing up, it was a very familiar place. I mean, I was only about, I don't know, 10 or so when I think it was Dewey who clamped down on it and really got rid of most of it. But I remember going down Columbia Street then and seeing all these gaudy lights at night and really fancy cars with license plates from different places.
Including the legislature, I'm sure.
Including that. And actually, you know, there was a conductor in Grand Central Station who, if he saw you were going to Hudson, he would punch your ticket with a heart-shaped punch.
That's very funny. Now, you're also a psychiatrist, as we have said, and you deal with your mother in this. How psychiatric is that?
Well, I think a lot of writers have difficult relationships with their mothers, and sometimes they write about them, and I never figured out a way until now. And I think it's very much about mothers and sons, this book. The narrator, when he comes home and has to live in his mother's house, and his mother has not been too kind to me, he starts getting letters from her. And she says she's going to continue writing letters. This is after her death. And then it turns out someone has a whole stack of letters that she's written in advance.
I remember that.
And in the letters, you know, you think they're loving letters from a mother to a son, and they're horrible letters. There's like, you know what your problem is? She said in the letter, it's total selfishness. And then he starts to see her flying around and having conversations with her. And it was a great journey for me to start with a lot of the reality of my mother. And then come, you know, through writing, it's very interesting. Tolstoy said, the measure of an artist is the love he shows his characters. And what I do in all my books, all my novels, I start out really being nasty to people in print, in the books. And then as I revise, I see it from their side more, and I kind of get a little bit of love for them. And that's what happens in this book.
But, Stephen, isn't that therapeutic in itself? You go into therapy, you have issues with your parents. By the time it's over, everybody's weeping, and you forgive them for their trespasses, and they allegedly forgive you.
Yeah, I think, Alan, that there is a great... This sounds a little corny, but I believe it. There's kind of a universal law in the universe that can guide us, and that's the universal law of love. And that if you get past the things that you've, you know, accumulated as you've grown back to some kind of love of relationship and connection and compassion, then, you know, yeah, you forgive people and you change. There are some people you can't forgive, but most of, you know, most people you can.
You said something earlier which I found very interesting, which is making sure there was a line between your medical practice, your psychiatric practice, and your novels. And I'm wondering whether or not your nom de plume, Samuel Shemp, was the way in which you sort of drew that line.
Well, I didn't think so when I took it. I took it because I was just starting my psychiatric practice, and I had been trained not to let patients know about things about their therapist, and especially this book, The House of God, which was radical and sexy and, you know, crazy in a way. And so I took it to protect my patients. And, of course, what happened is they all found out about it very soon. And then they came in and they said, "What, you wrote that sexy, crazy book?" And I nodded, and then they didn't care. They went on to say, you know, that lasted for 10 seconds, and then they said, "Oh, you should have heard what my mother said to me. Oh, or my boyfriend." You know, they didn't care about me. But I think you're right. It's taken me a long time to realize that was one reason that I took it, but the other reason that I took it was to have this identity as a writer, sort of an other identity. And I joke about how Shem seems to be doing these ridiculous things and taking over while Bergman tries to keep him in control. You know, it's like living with this kind of crazy artist all the time.
But you never, in hearing something about Shem, want to get up and yell, "Hey, hey, that's me!"
No, actually, what I've been, you know, it was a kind of a mistake because I have these two names. I would much rather say, like in this interview, you call me, you know, Steve.
Yeah.
And that's because we know each other.
Well, I think people should know.
I'd rather just have never taken it in a way.
I think people should know that, you know, you have heroic status in the town of Hudson, which, of course, has gone through its own metamorphosis of one kind or another. And, you know, you are the hometown boy who went good. And I have a wife who's much like that, who's been quite accomplished. And you were classmates. That's how I got to know you.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, Alan, this is so... When I came back for the bicentennial celebrations, I had a really powerful thing that set me on this course to come back home in the ways that I'm doing it now. And that is, I was giving a reading at the library, which, in fact, my mother was the one that finally got it passed. It was Hudson was the last city in New York State, if not the country, to have a public library, if you can imagine that,
yeah.
1961. Anyway, I gave a reading of a short story I'd written, the first thing I'd written about Hudson. It was about the Red Light District, actually, and it's part of a new novel. And afterwards, I walked back, and there was this guy who I hadn't seen for 20 years since high school, who had named Tom Klein, who had played as a point guard on the basketball team that I was on, that won the championship and all of that. And I was very moved, and so we talked a little bit, and I said, you know, those years were very meaningful to me. And he said, they're meaningful to me, too. Mm. And, I mean, my God, I felt so moved, and that all of a sudden got me started on, okay, what is here in myself and in the town? And one of the things I've tried writing about Hudson is I've always tried to be authentic and, if not always kind, at least understanding about the history of the town, which is just fascinating, and all the people that I knew there.
I understand that you're also a playwright and that you've got something coming up.
Well, yeah, you know, I've been lucky. I've been very productive ever since, actually, I didn't have a day job as a psychiatrist, you know, where I'm splitting my head all the time. The big thing... There are two big things, really. I guess the biggest thing is this play Janet, my wife, Janet Suri, and I wrote called Bill W. and Dr. Bob, which is about the relationship between the two men that founded Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935. And it was off Broadway in 2007 for 5 months, and it's been going all around the country. And this summer, we're bringing it back to off Broadway in a whole new way, which is not for profit, smaller theater. Under the donations to a treatment center in Minnesota, Hazelden. And because it's not for profit, we expect it to run forever and ever. And the revenues go back to a national college tour of campuses to deal with the epidemic of binge drinking.
Which, well, there must be an awful lot of people who say, if you knew Bill W. well enough to write about it, you were in it.
Well, I was in what?
You know, AA.
Well, that's, as you know, or I wasn't, I wouldn't say at the level of the press, which is one of the traditions of AA.
Sure.
You know, put it this way, that, I have specialized for a long time when I was still in psychiatry and in treatment of alcoholics and addicts, and one of the things that happened is I started to go to AA meetings to understand, and I was just overwhelmed with the incredible power of what these guys discovered, which, in a nutshell, is the healing power of mutual relationships. And that's amazing. And, you know, this is a mission for Janet and me. This is our service, in a way, to do this not-for-profit and have a whole bunch of things going on around the theater that are going to be outreach to the communities and take it to college campuses. I don't know if you or your listeners know, there is an epidemic of binge drinking on college campuses that's quite new, that kills 2,000 students a year just of alcohol poisoning, 5 a day. So we got to do something about that.
To hear more about this and to hear from our good friend, Stephen Bergman, you're going to have to be there at the Hudson Opera House on January 26th at 2 o'clock. The launch of his paper book, The Spirit of the Place, will be held at that time. Steve Bergman, always great to talk to you. Congratulations on all you've done. It's superb, and we appreciate it very much.
Well, congratulations to you for a great show, not just with me, but with everybody. You're amazing, Alan.